It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for January 8th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. The convention facilities in Las Vegas are nothing to sneeze at, but this number is still impressive. At the International Consumer Electronics Show this week, 2 million square feet of exhibit space is being used, and that means a lot of gizmos, big, small, airborne, worn. The good news is we have boots on the ground to help us sift through it all. Our friend and editor-in-chief of reviews at CNET, Lindsay Turrentine. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So where are you standing right now?
I'm standing just inside South Hall at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
Talk to me about 2014 CES is the year of what? Of sensors?
It's the year of sensors, which sounds so nerdy, but it's actually really interesting because it's allowing the world around us to start to talk to all of our regular displays like phones and computers.
Okay, what kind of sensors are we talking?
This sensor's for everything. There's a kind of a weird product called Mother.
I saw this. It sort of looks like Russian nesting dolls or something, right?
It does, but what it acts as is a hub to bring in signals from these little, they call them cookies, but they're little sensors that you can put, say, on a water glass so that you can track how much water you're drinking, or you can put in your child's backpack to see when they walk in the door. And you can basically put them all over your house to sense different things. It's kind of a do-your-own sensor kit.
What else?
So one thing that we saw here at the show that is absolutely crazy is these contact lenses that sense a projection off of a pair of glasses that you're wearing. And the glasses project light onto the lenses themselves. So the light actually hovers on your eyeball.
This seems like such a leap forward, and it's happened pretty quick.
I feel like we're in a middle place between knowing what we want and knowing what we can do.
Okay.
All of these sensors in our environment, both, we have to figure out what we want to know about, and we have to figure out where we're going to see that. Are we going to see it on our eyeballs? Are we going to see it on our wrist? Some of these new products will take off if they fill a really specific need that people can identify with. So Corning has a crock pot with a sensor and an app. That might be overkill, but the way these companies are thinking about it is like early days, we're just going to throw all this stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of reviews at CNET. Lindsay, stay warm in Vegas. I'm jealous.
I will. Thank you very much.
One big company that's playing with sensors at CES is Honeywell. The tech conglomerate has a new smart thermostat that listens a lot, and that's part of the company's larger plan for the connected home. We reached Energy Systems Manager Tony Utley at CES.
Honeywell thinks that voice interaction is going to be a big deal going forward. We've obviously put it into our thermostats, which means that we can crowdsource what people are actually saying to these devices. And so we can make these devices smarter and smarter over time without having to do anything to that product that's on the wall.
Another big focus for Honeywell is communicating, and not just between the company's own gadgets. Utley says Honeywell plans to have its systems talk with other systems and home appliances in the cloud. Thanks to internet videos, we all love ourselves a good fail these days. Well, it turns out failure is becoming a badge of honor in Silicon Valley, where having a company that bit the dust can now garner a pat on the back. But in economic terms, how does that work exactly? Well, let's hear from someone who earned her failure badge recently. Chrissy Clark on Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk has this report.
Danielle Morrill is a 28-year-old web entrepreneur who lives in San Francisco. A few years ago, she started a company called Referly. It paid people to write reviews about products they loved. It was her first try at building a business, and
my first, major fail.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I guess apparently that's going to help me in Silicon Valley, so I guess I should celebrate.
And in a way, she has. She used this music as the soundtrack to the blog post she wrote last spring, announcing that 6 months after she'd raised more than $1 million for Referly, it had failed.
My greatest fear as a startup founder isn't to fail,
she wrote in the post.
It's to become a zombie startup.
By this, she meant a company that's still operating, but has so little traction, it should be dead. When she made this announcement,
the response was huge.
Thousands of comments across the internet saying she was courageous, inspiring.
It was the highest traffic post I ever wrote.
in every other industry, you're actually really worried about your next job. But in our industry, people are glamorizing failure.
Josh Felser is a Silicon Valley investor and founded a couple very successful startups of his own. He says, sure, there are times you need to let go. But as a VC, it's his money that's on the line. And he wants to invest in people who are terrified of failing.
It should be like going to war. You want it to be bad enough and painful enough that you're only going to fail if it's the only option you have.
But you could argue the cavalier attitude toward failure in Silicon Valley that drives a venture capitalist like Felser mad is actually fueled by the venture capital game. When the aim is to win big, anything less than spectacular success can be tempting to bail on. In Danielle Morrill's case, that company she pronounced a failure, it was actually doing okay by the standards of many small businesses. A growing customer base, starting to make a little money.
But it was never really going to take off. And I certainly believe that when we raised money, the implied promise was that we would build a highly scaling, high-growth, venture-backed startup.
Morrill still has some investor money left. She's using it to fund a new startup and pay rent on the home office she and her two co-founders share in a penthouse apartment in one of San Francisco's newest skyscrapers. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
And one last note today, you've heard of Bitcoin, and Kanye West has served his digital currency namesake Coinye with a cease and desist letter, but the coin keeps coming. This week, a website surfaced for a new cryptocurrency named after a short man with a high kick, Norris Coin. Yep. As someone wrote online, if you have 5 Bitcoins and Chuck Norris has 5 Bitcoins, Chuck Norris has more money than you. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.